This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 202. Today, CJ and I are going to catch up on the latest news in the cloud. Recorded live, June 28th, 2017. Give CodeShip Pro a try. More teams than ever are using Docker and Linux for their .NET applications. CodeShip Pro is a fully customizable, continuous integration and delivery service in the cloud with the best support for any team that is using .NET and Docker together and can run builds on Linux environments. CodeShip Pro comes with ready-to-use integrations for Azure, including Azure Container Service, and more. It also offers a free, convenient local CLI tool that allows you to run your builds locally and is the only hosted CI/CD tool that lets you build your own environment, giving you the most control and flexibility no matter what tool or stack you're trying to use. Check out CodeShip Pro's free plan that grants 100 builds per month, unlimited projects, and unlimited users. Open source projects are always free on CodeShip. Visit CodeShip.com today or check out CodeShip.com/features/pro to learn more. Man, we haven't talked to each other in a while.
It's nice to hear you again, man.
Yeah, man, definitely. We did the episode 200, and then I know we did an interview. You did an interview recently with one of our sponsors, CodeShip, and then
yes,
yeah, I've been gone for about almost 2 weeks now, and
you've been traveling and everything.
Yeah, a bit of work, a bit of vacation, a bit of family vacation, which means I need a bit of my own vacation. But anyway, we had a
bit of everything.
Yeah, a bit of everything. How you been?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good. Speaking of vacations, my family are currently away on vacation. They're off camping, so I'm flying solo in my personal life right now as well.
That almost sounds like a vacation for you.
Hey, I wasn't going to go there, but...
Well, okay, so I'm assuming that you feel the same way that I do. And if you don't, then at least I'll paint a good picture for you. I love my family. I love going on vacation with my family. We also travel for business from time to time. But mm-hmm. when you travel with your family, if there are flights involved or road trip or hotel or anything like that, it really messes with your routine that you end up doing. Your wife is a lot like my wife, where she likes to plan, has a lot of control over how things are going and stuff. And so when I travel with my wife, I'm just kind of like, you know what? I'm not doing my thing. I'm really just taking my hands off because she's going to want to drive. In terms of, you know, figuratively, she's going to want to drive. Mm-hmm. I can't stand the way she drives. So like literally drives. So I insist on driving. But yeah, I mean, there's just a few parts when we travel as a family that I insist on. One, I drive. Two, I pack the car. Aside from that, she can do whatever she wants.
Yeah, those are your things. I think if you're used to, especially air travel.
Oh God.
There's only one thing that irritates me more about airports, or more than airports. And guess what it is?
Taking your family through an airport.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, airports are horrible. Doing it with families are even worse. And I don't know, as an air traveler, once you've done it a lot, you've got the process totally down, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and you're on autopilot, and you know exactly how everything's supposed to be. As soon as you mix in family, all bets are off, right? It's mm-hmm. like trying to manage a tornado, you know? Mm-hmm. And everything from the airport experience and then on a plane, it's just not enjoyable for me. So
no, but you know, you say that, and you know, what's worse than going through an airport? I think right now I have something that's worse that you and I both share right now. FedEx.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's pretty bad.
Yeah, right now I'm about to, I'd love to put FedEx in a box and run it through the US mail right now. So
yeah, yeah.
I have two stories. One of them involves you and both of them involve me, and both of them are really frustrating. We're hoping one of them gets resolved today. Hoping both of them get resolved today. One of them's been resolved. But so I've been traveling. I was at the Office 365 Engage conference in Haarlem, Netherlands, or Haarlem, Holland. I'm not sure, whatever. Last week or 2 weeks ago, I guess the week of, what would that be for our listeners? That would have been the week of June the 19th, where I was presenting on a few things. It was pretty cool hanging out, seeing some people. Got to meet Valid for the first time in person, which was very cool.
Awesome.
One of our sponsors.
Yep.
Yeah, I come around a corner and I'm just looking at the expo stuff and I'm like, hey, look, there's Waldeck. Hey, look, there's Valid. So it was kind of cool. They were next door to each other.
That's classic.
And before I left, I was going straight from this trip to the Western North Carolina mountains in the U.S. to be with about, I don't know, 45 or 50 family members for a reunion and be with my family. And I was a little apprehensive about taking our
worst nightmare ever.
No, it was actually pretty good. We actually had a really good time. The weather was awesome. We like rafting, all that kind of, it was a ton of fun. But anyway, I was a little apprehensive because we were taking the Tesla up there for the first time. And I was a little apprehensive about charging because where we were going was fairly remote and they have electricity, but, you know, I don't know. It's still a little, I don't know. It kind of feels like going to visit Mark Rackley in Arkansas. You wonder if they have electricity, right? So I wonder if he listens to every episode. That'll be fun if he notices that one. So I was a little apprehensive. And so I'm checking out the different spots and there's nowhere like Tesla superchargers up there. So I'm looking at all the other options. And there's, for people who have electric vehicles, there were, you know, J1772 plugs, which can be used for a lot of different things. And there's another one called a Chadimo. And that was going to be my best option. So right before I left, I went to the Tesla site and ordered a Chadimo adapter for our car. And Tesla's ordering, their online store isn't very reliable in terms of like, you know, good notifications and everything, like an Amazon style is. So I checked with a few other people and said, hey, when you guys have ordered these, how long do they take? And people are like going, oh, 3 to 4 weeks. You know, they've been back ordered. They're in high demand, blah, blah. So I'm like, okay, well, I need to come up with another solution. So let me just email the store and find out what they say. And sure enough, the lady got back to me right away and says, I told her, I was like, you know, I need this for leaving on a vacation next Thursday. And this was like the previous week. So it was like a week and a half ahead of time. And I was like, so, and I put a 2-day shipping on it. So, but is it on back order? Is it going to be shipped? I have to have it at our house by Wednesday before we leave to make sure that we can do it. And she comes back, she goes, oh, they're on back order for 3 or 4 weeks. I'll refund the shipping, but it's not going to be there in time. And I'm like, damn. Okay. So let me go research some other options. Well, then I'm in Holland and I get this email from FedEx saying, hey, your package is shipped. I'm like, what? Wasn't supposed to ship yet. I'm like, okay, cool. So it's coming. And then I go, look, it's showing up on Wednesday, the day before my wife was leaving with the kids.
Nice.
She'd leave at like 7 a.m. to pick me up at the airport in Atlanta. So I live in Florida. It was going to pick me up in Atlanta and then we're going to drive the rest of the way. So it says signature required. So I text my wife and I'm like, hey, heads up. The charger's coming. This is going to make our life easier. Do you have to go anywhere today? She's like, I only have to go take the dog. I picked Steven up from my son up from a camp that he's doing. And I have to take the dog to the kennel before we leave. And I'm like, no problem. So she goes and does that stuff and she gets home. No problem. FedEx hasn't been by or anything. She's waiting in the house the whole day. And finally, around like 7 o'clock, she goes outside and looks. And there's a door tag sitting outside saying nobody answered. And the dude must have knocked on the door like the softest, not like the... I don't know if anybody could hear it. The softest knock in the world wasn't there. So we go through, we check with FedEx and stuff. And the only thing that they can do, they can redirect shipment delivery to somewhere else. If we send it to North Carolina, it's going to be like $100. They said, or we can hold it at the local location. I'm like, all right, fine. You know what? We're not going to get it. Hold it location. He goes, we will hold it until today, until June the 28th. So I call them and I'm like, does that mean you're sending it back to the shipper on Wednesday? Or does that mean that I have... all the way up until and through the end of the day, Wednesday, before you send it back. And she's like, nope, you can go in on Wednesday before noon to get it and you'll be fine. What happens when I show up today?
It's not there.
She's like, we've already sent it back. I'm like, what do you mean you've already sent it back? I was on the phone with someone that said it would be fine. Oh, no. Sorry, we've already sent it back. I start like pitching a fit like a little, like, you know, like my 8-year-old daughter does if she doesn't get to play her Kindle for a little bit longer. And miraculously, it showed up out the door. I mean, she comes in and goes, oh, look, we just found it. I'm like, oh, isn't that funny?
Isn't that cute?
So I got my charger.
How miraculous is that? Yes.
There's story number one.
Yeah, exactly. So the one that involves us is, you know, arguably less serious, but it's, arguably more serious too.
Yeah, and even, but perplexing. And let's just start this story with, we don't know how this is going to end up.
We haven't figured, this hasn't finished yet. Yeah.
Yeah. So I ordered 2 Lego Saturn V rockets. One of them, I built one. And the other one, I was going to hold as an investment. But you ordered 2, but yours were on back order. So you and I had a little agreement. I'll send you the one that I have. And then when your 2 come in, you send me one of yours and we'll just use both of those as our investments.
Exactly.
So I go to a local FedEx office. I send it to them. I send it to you, to your address, at Hyperfish, attention Chris Johnson, the business name, the correct address and everything.
You sent me the tracking number and a text message as well.
Yep.
Got a photo of the receipt.
Yep, photo of the receipt. And then out of the blue, what happens? Of course, Lego decides the one on back order for you, they ship the very next day. So we're like, well, great, we didn't even need to do this. But at any rate.
Yes. And so two additional ones showed up on the same day yours was supposed to arrive,
there
as
you
it
go.
Turns out.
And so... I got a notification that it was signed for and you got it, right?
Apparently.
So
I don't have it. I still don't have it. This is a week later.
But it was signed for by somebody named Alejo.
Yeah.
Do you know an Alejo?
No.
Does anybody in your,
don't.
Anybody in your building know an Alejo?
Apparently not. I asked around. And so you addressed it to my name and Hyperfish at my building address.
Mm-hmm. Not a huge building.
And normally things, no, it's only 5-7 stories, but there's only one Hyperfish.
Mm-hmm.
And normally things would get to me with what how you addressed it. Normally that would be fine. Hyperfish, there's only one of us. They know where we live. So yeah, it didn't arrive. I actually went home that day looking for the package because I thought, oh, it's been delivered. That's awesome. I didn't really look at where it had been delivered, and it had been delivered to Kirkland, but I live in Woodinville. I went home and go, oh my God, somebody's dropped it on the front doorstep and somebody's nicked it. And now I don't have it. I was freaking out that somebody had nabbed the package off the front doorstep. And anyway, that didn't make any sense when I saw it had been delivered to Kirkland. And I was like, oh, I must have sent it to the office. Cool. Didn't show up. Asked around, asked the post office in the facility because they drop packages there sometimes if they can't find somebody. Asked the main office, has there been a package turned in at the main office for somebody? Anyway, they couldn't find it. And the saga started and we put a trace on it with FedEx. I heard nothing back. You were in North Carolina at the time. South Carolina? North Carolina?
Okay. North Carolina, yep.
Yeah. You started a trace on it. Super random. They don't know where it's gone. Somebody signed for it. No idea who, where. We don't know what happened, right? And then randomly, you get a call yesterday or today or something and said, oh, yeah, we found your package.
It's going to be
re-delivered.
No, I called them this morning. Actually, I called customer service.
Gotcha.
Well, no, first, so when I went to go pick up the Tesla adapter this morning, I stopped by the FedEx store. So I went to one of those like print and ship kind of places to ship it to you. And that was different from where our adapter was being held. But it was on the way. So I stopped by and I said, hey, I need to get a copy of the receipt for proof that I shipped it. And they tell me, we can't print a receipt for you. I'm like, why not? Well, we closed out for the day, so we can't print the receipt. I'm like, that's odd. I said, well, I need to have proof that I actually shipped something to someone with the address on it. And they said, oh, it doesn't matter. When we print the receipts, we don't include the address of where it was shipped to on the receipts. I'm like, so how is the customer supposed to have any proof that they shipped something with you to another location? So we get the tracking number. But the tracking number doesn't have the address on it. FedEx does, but FedEx has the proof. Andrew Connell doesn't have any proof of where it went. And she kind of looked at me and I was like, oh my God. Okay, whatever. So I go home, I get home and I call FedEx. It's like an hour ago. I call FedEx and I was like, I explain what had gone on. And so I'm just trying to find out where my box is. Meanwhile, I mean, it's not just a Lego that's in there. There's also a collector item that's irreplaceable in there that I was sending you.
Yeah.
That is, I will save that part of the story. That's not important. Well, to anybody else, to you and me, it is. So I explained to her what's going on and she says, oh yeah, I show it's back on the 7:30 this morning. It's been put back on the truck and it's being scheduled for redelivery today between 9 and 1 o'clock. And I'm like, what?
Where did it go?
It doesn't show that on the FedEx site. Where has it been the last 8 days? I don't know.
Nobody seems to know. I get a call this morning from some random dude. I answer the call and I said, hello. And he said, have you lost a package? That's how he opened the phone call. It's like, what? Yes, I have. Anyway, he's like, it's back at the depot. It's like, okay, do you want it? yeah, no shit, Sherlock. I want my goddamn package. Anyway, so apparently this driver guy, he was the FedEx driver. We may find out that's the guy that signed for it and it really never actually made it anywhere. We'll see. I suspect some shiftiness is involved. We'll see.
Yeah, it sure sounds like it. It is.
Anyway, so it hasn't showed up yet. Ooh, actually, I see a FedEx van outside the window right now.
Okay. If the Hyperfish doorbell rings, then you have to go find the package. Yeah, okay. You have to go. If the doorbell rings, go get it.
Okay, we better move on anyway because we've got some news to cover today.
Yeah, that's true.
We'll see if this works out.
Yeah, no kidding. What if you could take any process your teams use to get work done and make it happen automatically? What if you could save countless hours and help people work better together? Nintex can make that happen. With the Nintex platform, work flows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back, and it flows in and out of the tools that you use every day. With Nintex, workflows so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever.
Okay,
so we have a bunch of news that we wanted to share today. Why don't you go first?
Sure.
I'm hosting today. So you go ahead and give us a couple of your links, and then I got a couple of links that I'll share as well.
Yeah, I mean, keeping on the theme of right hand not talking to left hand, SharePoint communication sites are beginning to roll out to Office 365 customers. Now, you might ask, why is that so random and weird, left hand not talking to right hand? Turns out, the only way the public found out about this was the head of communication sites engineering at Microsoft tweeted it about communication sites being rolled out to first release tenants, and Twitter went a little bit nuts, and then Microsoft went a little bit more nuts and quickly backpedaled and, or not backpedaled, that's the wrong word, caught up on what they were doing, what their other hand was doing, and put out a blog post about it. And turns out they are rolling out these new sort of what they call modern design sites, right? Basically responsive. It's not that modern anymore. But they're putting out these new templates for SharePoint sites and Office 365, and that they're rolling out to first release customers. I went and looked at my tenant. I'm a first release tenant, don't have it yet. A bunch of other people don't have it yet. So it sounds like it's rolling out over a period of time. But yes, much confusion ensued when the head of engineering said it was out and it wasn't out. But they're pretty cool, actually. I mean, this is sort of more in terms of the march towards sort of modernizing some of the SharePoint UI, better ways to create sites with nicer layouts and mobile friendly and all that sort of stuff, and way easier just to create pages and things. So yeah, we'll link to the blog post in the show notes.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, it's funny you say the, you know, left hand not talking to the right hand. I have another example of that from the Office group, specifically the SharePoint group, where I believe it was 2 weeks ago, some MVP said, hey, look, there's a new patch out for the June 2017 update for SharePoint 2016 on-prem. And one of the line items in the support thing said, adds the SharePoint framework to SharePoint on-prem. I'm like, well, wait a minute, I thought that was part of the feature pack. So I tweeted it, and I come to find out the backstory was that wasn't supposed to be in there. And let's just say shit show ensued over in Redmond. And all of a sudden, there was a bunch of tweets saying, no, that was wrong. And then the thing got updated and it pulled it back out. So
go figure. So hold on. They managed to get a feature into a patch by accident.
No, they managed to get a entry into a change log.
Oh, I see.
By accident.
Well, did they update the patch, though? Were the bits actually in the patch?
No, the bits were not in the patch. The bits
gotcha.
I don't think they were. Maybe they were. Maybe there's part of them that's in there.
Well, I was just wondering, maybe they were, yeah.
Maybe they were and they weren't figured. It's harder to see like what's in there. I mean, I did some little checking on the latest update for the SharePoint Frameworks generator, and I could see some stuff in there that denotes between SPO and yeah. On-prem. But yeah, it's not, I don't know, that's not there. So anyway, that's left hand not talking to the right hand. That's common.
Yeah, shipping software at Microsoft is surprisingly difficult. Like, I know that sounds really kind of a little bit silly, but it is actually quite hard for the engineering teams to know when their stuff ships
yeah.
and into which tenants and stuff, because Office 365 is beast, and the way things get into it in terms of bits, it's not the Office 365 team deploying the bits directly. It goes into, you know, ship cycles and, yeah, they've got these patch trains and all that sort of stuff. So sometimes it's a bit random about when stuff makes it in, but not into on-prem patches. I got a good friend of mine who's one of the lead site reliability engineering leads at Google. We could ask him to come on and have a chat to us about how Google do their cloud.
Yeah.
How they run it.
Anyway, I'd be curious.
I got another one here. Microsoft Forms public preview for Office 365 to commercial customers. So there was this product called Microsoft Forms that was only out for education customers last summer. So we're about a year later, and now they're previewing it for commercial customers. But this is it's sort of a survey tool, much like a Google form would be, but in Office 365. So you can go create forms pretty straightforwardly and easily. It's actually quite nifty. Like, the tool's pretty reasonable, but it's out in preview for commercial customers now, so you could play with that. It's not really designed to be an InfoPath replacement or anything like that. It's more like a easy way to go build simple surveys and simple forms to go collect information. But it's actually done reasonably well. Like, I think it's pretty good.
Very cool.
Yeah, that's again in first release and then rolling out to other tenants over the next few months.
Very cool. Why don't you do all your news? You want me to do some of mine too?
Oh yeah, I can. I'll I'll go through a couple of others.
Go for it.
Microsoft could surpass Amazon in the cloud in cloud computing this year. An article came out from Investopedia, and basically they're saying, hey, Amazon's been the leader for a long time, but according to an analyst firm, a place called Pacific Crest Securities, said that Azure could be, it's hard to know, they use some odd terms, but I think what they're getting at is Microsoft's cloud revenue could surpass Amazon's cloud revenue this year. I think that's correct.
So not like total like usage and all that stuff. It's more just a revenue side.
Yeah, I think they're focusing on the revenue side as opposed to, yeah, how many customers or how many CPUs or what have you. But yeah, they're basically saying that Microsoft could surpass Amazon, that they're at a higher growth rate, and they could see Microsoft's cloud revenue surpass Amazon's, which I thought was pretty interesting.
That is interesting.
Yes. We'll link to it so you can go read it. But yeah, I just thought it was a very catchy headline. And so I read it, of course, clickbait for sure. But it was an interesting takeaway. I got another one here. ASOS, how they migrated from local monolith to microservices in Azure. So you know how we talk a bunch about Docker and Azure and microservices and things like that, building applications and all of that. This is a How We Built It story. It was published Jeremy Chapman on the Azure blog and Cloud Strategy. Posted a video about from ASOS about how they migrated from monolith to cloud to microservices. Yeah, like I said, a bit of a How We Did It video. It just gives a bit of insight into the process they took, how they broke down their monolith, what made sense, what didn't, all that sort of stuff, taking advantage of geo footprint across Azure and things, and how they got some decent scaling out of it. So it's just an interesting story.
That is interesting. Those are really cool to see how companies have done this, because that's a huge undertaking to shift your business this way. And I know I've got a friend that is one of the senior architects for a very large financial services company that's looking to do something similar with their main business. And they are hearing the stuff that they're doing is, and what they have to go through. It's like this old, you know, financial services are, those are old embedded systems. They even deal with AS400s and stuff. So it's really interesting to hear the stories, how they are going about making their migration.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Speaking of migration, I've got one final one. Really interesting. Walmart said to vendors, get off Amazon's cloud.
This is going to be the theme of the year, is like the heat up on the cloud wars really between Amazon and everybody else.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So now that Amazon bought Whole Foods, Walmart aren't too happy about that and are basically saying to vendors, hey, if you're running critical systems as part of your business to deliver to our business, then you better not be doing that on AWS, which
makes sense.
I don't know. I can see strategically why it makes sense to them. It's a little bit heavy-handed, but this is going to happen, right? Because Amazon are a retail company, and they're also a cloud company, and they're also food delivery company, and they're also, you know, they're all sorts of things. So there's going to be definitely some competition in all sorts of spaces.
Yeah, there was two interesting aspects of that. You know, I saw one comment by some analyst that said that Amazon just became Walmart before Walmart could become Amazon. I mean, I think that's a little far-fetched, but I think it's interesting.
Steven Sinofsky. Do you remember Steven Sinofsky from Microsoft?
Oh, yeah, the guy that basically turned Windows to shit.
Well, yeah.
I'm kidding.
yeah.
Not really. Not too much.
I mean, he killed Windows 7 first before he did that. Yeah. But anyway, he tweeted, companies become something along, I'm not going to say this verbatim, but effectively he said, companies become their competition they used to fight, or something like that,
yep.
Right? And so Amazon are trying to become Walmart, and Walmart are trying to become Amazon. And it was pretty interesting.
Yeah. There was the other thing I thought that was interesting about that is that Amazon paid cash for Whole Foods. And if you saw what the stock market did in response on Amazon's stock, that very next day or the next 2 days, their market cap increased by the same amount or more than what Amazon said they were going to buy them. So they basically got them for free. Not for free, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Okay. So I got some stuff here.
What do you got for us?
Actually, the first one, I remember this tweet that you put out. You know, we saw the stuff about Uber CEO Travis Kalanick is out from just different stuff that's going on. A tweet came to mind today that you posted, you shared with me back on June the 13th. It says that now Uber doesn't have a CEO, COO, CTO, or CFO. I guess this is the closest it's ever been to a self-driving car company.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah. Priceless.
All right. So I got 5 bits of news here that are mostly all Azure related. Actually, I think they are all Azure related. Yeah. So the first one here is that Gartner puts AWS and Microsoft Azure at the top of its Magic Quadrant for infrastructure as a service. This isn't really news to me. I mean, I thought that this is the same thing that we've seen every year or every quarter that they put out their Magic Quadrant. Google or Amazon and Microsoft are always in the top leader section. So if you're familiar with the Magic Quadrant, you know, you've got just think of a square divided into 4 cubes. And in the top right quadrant, are essentially, they call them visionaries and leaders. And Microsoft and Amazon are the two that are in that area. Amazon is a little bit farther up and to the right than Microsoft is, but it still is that's the place you want to end up being. I did find it kind of interesting, though, that Google is way below both of them. So for the Google Cloud platform, they are only in the visionary and a little bit lower on the ability to execute piece, which I found that to be kind of interesting, because they do have a really good story on their IaaS stuff, especially around pricing. They've got the best pricing compared to everyone, or at least the most consumer-friendly or customer-friendly pricing. But it's no surprise that, you know, they're nowhere near what AWS is in terms of consumption and stuff around that. So
I wonder if that's more like a reflection of their strategy overall as a company, and like, I'm sure they've got great people they could execute if they wanted, but I wonder if it's more like they're an advertising company, mm-hmm. and it's not strategic to them.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. That's on the IaaS side. I mean, the Google Cloud platform, a lot of the stuff that they do, you know, they, like the other clouds, you leverage the VMs for a lot of different things. So like, what is it? Yeah. Their Spinnaker, which is their deployment, their continuous integration product that came out of Netflix and got open sourced.
Yeah.
And their container builder platform, all that stuff is based off the VMs, and they use like base VMs, and then you can expand those to use bigger VMs to make the things faster.
Gotcha.
But that's interesting. That is one bit of IaaS news I had. Another bit of IaaS news that came out in mid-June from Azure is that they have announced larger disk sizes for IaaS VMs on Microsoft Azure. These sizes of disks can now go up. They used to be 1 terabyte was the max, and it's up to 4 terabytes of the max. So it is enabling customers to add 4 times more disk storage capacity per virtual machine.
You said 4 terabytes, was that right?
4 terabytes per disk. Now
that should be just about enough to NPM install the SharePoint framework.
So, This part I find really interesting. You hear some of these numbers and you hear some of these capabilities like it from different keynotes of different conferences from different vendors. And it's like, oh God, those numbers are huge. I'd love to just kind of find a company that's like going, yeah, this is how it applies to us. This is actually useful for us, because I can't imagine some of the workloads that are using this. Customers can now provision a total of 256 terabyte disk storage on a GS5 VM using 64 disks, each one with 4 terabytes. As a result, customers no longer need to scale up to multiple VMs or to stripe multiple disks to provision larger disk capacity. If I'm doing stuff in the cloud, would you want one VM with 256 terabytes of storage? Or would you want to have multiple VMs that leverage smaller pools of storage?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I mean, it depends on the use, but to be frank, like, I've never had a use for that much storage on one machine. I'm sure there's some scenario where there's like some big processing thing or some, like, it's, I don't know.
That's the thing that to me, I just
want to download the internet and do something with it.
That's where I'm trying to figure out, like, you know what? I'd love to find someone that actually says that, yes, this is going to help our business. Like, okay, what do you do? You don't have to tell me the details of it. I'm just curious. What do you do? How does this help? And then of course, to flip it over to the other side, the exact same blog post that they put this announcement out on was smaller premium managed disks for cost efficiency. You can now have all the way down to a 32 gigabyte disk or a 64 gigabyte disk on their premium storage. So you can go all the way to 4 terabytes or 4,000 gigs all the way down to 32 gigs.
A thumb drive.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Interesting.
Oh, well.
Yeah, that is curious. I don't know what the deal with that is.
So I'll have a link to that in the show notes. Another bit of news here I have around Azure, or around, you know, Microsoft Azure, and specifically around Azure, is a blog post from the middle of June by Corey Sanders, who's the director of compute for Microsoft Azure. Mm-hmm. And that is that Microsoft is joining the Cloud Foundry Foundation. So Cloud Foundry, if you're not familiar with Cloud Foundry is, it's a way to, God, how do you describe this? It's an open source like platform for being able to manage like containers and VMs and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's kind of open source orchestration and infrastructure management thing.
Yeah, it's kind of taken a bit, it's taken off a bit more from, what was it called? OpenStack, I think.
Yeah.
OpenStack is still a big thing, like from the Rackspace guys, but it's, you know, kind of saying, I want to do my own private cloud and I need an operating system to run it. You know, you don't want to use Google Cloud Platform or AWS or Azure. You want to do your own thing. That's what Cloud Foundry, that's what that OpenStack was supposed to do. Cloud Foundry kind of is doing that over on this, seems to be a better executed story. But this is just Microsoft is joining the foundation to enable companies who want to stand up their own Azure virtual machines and then have their own operating system that manages the whole thing. They want that out there to be able to, you know, have that as an option as well. So they have a bunch of things that they've talked about here. Cloud Foundry, CLI, and the Azure Cloud Shell, support for Azure databases and MySQL and Azure databases, a cloud provider interface that can be used between two different clouds that are using Cloud Foundry. There's a Visual Studio Team Services plugin that they're doing with this, a MOM suite for login analytics, and a Meta Service Broker as well. So there's a bunch of pieces to this, but it's just Microsoft jumping into the open source and contributing back to the community.
Gotcha.
I have two more things here. One of them is, this is pretty interesting. We talked a couple weeks ago about a tool called Draft. And Draft, what is coming from the group, a company that Microsoft bought called Deis, D-E-I-S. And they have a tool called Draft. And what Draft is it's supposed to make it easier for you to do deployment and development of your applications into any Kubernetes cluster. So what they've done is there's a cool little video, actually a little animated GIF that shows you creating an app, taking an application that I think is written in Python, and then you can use it to go through and to build up your container and ship it off to a Kubernetes cluster that makes things a heck of a lot easier to deploy to Kubernetes because it's not as to a Kubernetes cluster. It's not as straightforward as deploying to, like, say, using just a Docker container because Kubernetes has a couple other logical constructs that you want to work with. And so this is supposed to make things a little bit easier for you. And it's just a nice little thing that they're showing where just being able to leverage Draft to make that deployment of an application of Kubernetes a little bit simpler.
Yeah, it's definitely kind of addressing that Kubernetes is too hard to get started kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty daunting. So I've heard that before. So yeah, nice tool. I have to take a look at this. It's pretty cool.
The last one that I have, this is kind of near and dear to me, but it's around Node.js and on Azure. And it's a blog post by Josh Gavant, who's a PM with Azure. And what he shows is how to use application insights with a Node.js application to more easily find issues and chat and problems that you may be having within your application using Azure App Insights. And so he's got a blog post here that shows you how to find related events. So when you see things, you know, failures or other things that are going on within an event, if you've added in some stuff into your application, it will, that supports this, it'll publish native events from a Node.js application, it'll publish those native events over to App Insights, and then you can do whatever you want to do with standard App Insights stuff, whether exporting the data into Power BI dashboards, God forbid if you ever want to share that information though, or being able to do it to see, like, you know, other like logging information and monitoring and all that kind of stuff. So it's
nice.
Yeah, it's pretty cool what they've done with this.
It's really nice. I have to take a look at that too. Gosh, lots to do.
Yeah, man, always a lot of fun. Well, I got some more stuff for you that's going to kind of blow your mind, but it's we're going to save that for the picks.
Excellent.
Hey, why don't we dive into the picks?
Sounds good to me, man.
The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by Valid.nl. Valid's motto is stay ahead. Its mission is to enable its customers to excel in their business through the innovative use of IT. Valid is always on the lookout for new colleagues. Are you interested in all things happening in Azure, whether in infrastructure, SQL Server, Office 365, BI, SharePoint, or .NET? Look them up on Valid.nl. All right. Mr. Johnson, do you have any picks for us today?
I do. I've got one developer-related one, one geek-related one, and just a bit of a throw-it-out-there gloat kind of one.
Oh, okay. I'll go find a third one.
It's not really, yeah, it's not a biggie, so don't worry if you don't have three. But okay, so the first one, developers who use spaces make more money than those who use tabs. Have you seen this post from Stack Overflow?
I love it. And I love Sanofsky's comment to it as well. But yes.
Yeah. It's really fascinating. Like, so that, you know how they do their yearly survey or whatever, they do these developer surveys and it gives some really interesting data. Anyway, there's a guy, David Robinson, who's written a bit of a post about this holy war amongst developers about tabs versus spaces. And you know, the famous Silicon Valley episode where he ditches his girlfriend because she uses tabs and he's a spacer, right? And basically it's that serious. Anyway, so it turns out that people who use spaces make more money salary-wise than those who use tabs. And let's just be clear, like when you hit tab in Visual Studio, unless you're a complete backwards Luddite, it's usually inserting spaces.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Right. Normally it sticks in. For C sharp, it's normally four spaces. For JavaScript, it's normally two spaces. But, you know, your mileage may vary and company standards are different, all that sort of stuff. Anywho, so you can use the tab key. That's okay because it's sticking spaces in. But I'm a spacer, not a tabber, I think. Turns out you make more money if you use spaces. And it's not just like a percentage difference. It's not like you make 10% more money if you use spaces. It's like you make $10,000 more if you use spaces all the way up the chart. So it's not like, it's not a percentage difference. It looks like you make anywhere between 10 and 15 grand more if you use spaces. It doesn't matter how much you earn or how many years you've been in your job. It's just the same the whole way up.
I think that doesn't that have something to do with the fact that you don't have to defend your stupidity of using tabs, so you actually are more efficient, you get more work done? Sorry.
Yeah. Or my theory on this was that if you're a spacer, you probably use a better language, which standardized on spaces many years ago.
There we go.
And so you're being paid more because you're in better demand. Higher demand.
Yeah, I'm a spacer as well, but I have a question for you then.
Okay, go for it.
Are you a two-spacer or a four-spacer?
Absolutely a four-spacer.
Oh, God. Okay, we can disagree on some things.
Yeah, and I'm a curly brackets on a new line, and I know you're not.
No, I'm not. I'm not. That's okay. No. We're at least close there. I sat through a session at the conference when I was at Holland last week. I won't name who it was, but the speaker was an eight-spacer.
What?
Man, there was so much horizontal scrolling going on in there. There was more negative space in the editor than I have ever seen.
Okay, all I'm going to say is Visual Studio defaults to four for a reason. Anyway, let's move on.
Go ahead.
I probably make more money with four spaces. I'm only kidding.
That's okay. You can install Visual Studio on your Surface, and you know that there goes half your storage space. Go ahead, though. Go to your next pick.
Yeah, good call. Okay, this is the geeky one. The results of the GIF survey are in. The correct way to say it is GIF with, like, gift. With a hard G, not GIF with a soft G, like gin.
Like the peanut butter?
That's a US thing. Anyway, GIF in New Zealand is the stuff that you clean bathtubs with. But anyway, so the survey is in. 83% of people responded, obviously, I say it the correct way. But weirdly enough, 16.3% people said, I say it the incorrect way. Why do you say it that way then? Most people think 77.8% say it's with a hard G, like gift. So turns out there is some variation in age ranges. The gender, female versus male breakdown is roughly the same. But yeah, pretty interesting survey. Anyway, so the responses are in. Speaking of another religious battle, GIF versus GIF. So obviously, it's with a hard G.
If there was any doubt.
And then the final one is we won the America's Cup.
We won the America's Cup?
And when I say we, Emirates Team New Zealand.
Oh, I see. How did you guys get the boat to stay on the water and not like fall off the earth?
Magic, my friend. We've also got birds without wings. So there you go.
There's some
weird things that happen down there. All I bring this up is, so it's kind of a big deal. It's the world's oldest sporting trophy. So the America's Cup is the oldest sporting trophy in the world, and it's been going back and forth over the years, but it's kind of a big deal for New Zealand because the whole country watches the yachting. It's kind of a point of pride. We suffered the worst sporting defeat in the history of the world last time this was raced. Arguably the worst defeat ever. We were 8-1 up, I think. Yeah, 8-1. And we had to win one more race to win the cup, and we still lost.
Oh, my God.
The US team came back in San Francisco and won 8 races in a row when all we had to get was one more, and we lost it. And it was the most heart-wrenching thing to watch. But anyway, so the America's Cup's going back to New Zealand.
Well, congratulations.
You're like, what is this sailing thing you talk of?
No, I'm not a sailing follower, but I saw the post that...
But you're a racing follower.
I'm a racing... Anything that's speed related, yeah, I'm into it.
You watch these things, man. They're crazy.
So that's the thing. I don't follow it, but I saw your post about it on Facebook, and then I would jump in and go look at it or watch a video, and it's like, God, that thing is flying. It's really cool. It's really cool.
Pretty impressive. It's just an incredible engineering feat. But anyway, so the America's Cup's going back to New Zealand, which would be kind of exciting. What about you? What are your picks?
Awesome. I'll stay with the speed thing for you for a second, and then I'll move my way back to geeky like you did. So I'll just do your picks in reverse order then. So the first one is something called, it's from the NASA Aeronautics book series, Unlimited Horizons. This one is titled The Design and Development of the U-2. It is a free PDF that you can get access to. It's a fixed layout PDF, 7 megs. There's a Kindle reader version of Mobi for 12.1 megs. There's even a 23 meg version for EPUB for all of our e-readers. It's really freaking cool. Basically, what it does is it goes over the lifespan of more than 6 decades, and it talks about how the U-2 evolved from a relatively basic high-altitude camera platform for performing clandestine... I'm not saying that right, I don't think.
Clandestine is correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Recon missions into a complex multi-sensor platform that's been adapted for a multitude of civil and military roles. So it shows how it was born from the Cold War, necessary to maintain balance of power between the East and the West. It now serves equally well as a high-altitude tool for tracking terrorists in the mountains of Afghanistan or for tracking the migration of destructive spruce bark beetles through the forests of Alaska.
That's awesome. There's a very cool video, like an episode... a TV episode on YouTube that you can go watch where James May from Top Gear, Gear host, goes up to the edge of space in a U-2, and it is breathtaking, like absolutely amazing.
I think that's the one, it might be the same one I looked at, where he looks down, he can see like a 747, like tens of like 50,000 feet below him, and then you just look out, you're at the envelope, you can get almost up to the meridian line where you can see you can see the curve of the Earth. You can see you can see space and everything. And then looking down,
you black
can see
black above you and blue below you.
Yeah, there's a cool picture where the guy on the cover of the book or on the cover of the title, the banner for on the page where I'll link to in the show notes. It's one of the pilots who is they have to be in spacesuits. He's sitting there, and the reflection on his mask shows the curve of the Earth, and that top half of his mask is all black from space, and the bottom half is, you know, the sun setting below him.
Wow.
It's pretty slick.
That's really cool. What a great find.
Yep. So that's one. Another pick that I have, let's go to the geeky, and then I'm just going to go to the flat out, like just nerdy that will totally, you know, just chill you out for a while. The National Security Agency is now on GitHub. The NSA is on GitHub.
Is that where all these exploits are coming from?
Now, there are a ton of projects. There's like 30-some-odd projects.
Random.
It's really cool. I think that I would probably really do a serious code review on these before I installed anything on any of my machines or downloading it, because they have some like CASA, which identifies unexpected and prohibited certificate authority certificates on Windows systems. Or it might add them. There's one called Ghost Secure, which is an easy to use and portable VPN system built with Linux and a Raspberry Pi 3. Again, I might take a little closer look into this before I deploy it.
Can anybody say backdoor?
Manages and standardizes existing commercial hard drives, or installs rootkits, maybe. I don't know. It's pretty cool. It's just nationalsecurityagency.github.io has got a ton of projects on here. It's interesting. I don't know. I'm almost like scared of even browsing through the repos to see if there's what's there.
Yeah, no joke, right? I guess that's pretty interesting, though. I mean, cool. Good for them getting involved. But yeah, the tinfoil hat part of me goes like, stay the hell away from there.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Okay, so... Yeah. And my last one here, this is just, you're going to get stuck. I don't recommend you go to this link right now, CJ, because you will get stuck. You probably, like me, you have work to do today. But this guy on YouTube has a channel, and all he does is he takes old Hot Wheels cars and restores them. He takes them apart. He shows on this one. This one was a...
Rest in peace, my productivity.
Oh, my God. It is... I will tell you, man, it is... It is strangely therapeutic. He took this old, and I can't remember what it was, but he took this old 1968 car that was just beat up and the windshield was all fogged up and stuff and the paint was all chipped. And he's like, if you look here, it looks actually, you know, the metal is still good. He shows you how to do an acid wash on it, how to go through and do a nice buffing down of the whole thing, how to paint it, the best way to paint it. Shows how he looked at the wheels. He goes, the wheels are actually in good shape. Goes through and does it and says, I'm going to give it a special paint job. I want to go with this rose color here. And it is... He has this whole like channel of all these videos he's done. It's pretty
wow.
It's really cool. It's strange, but it's really, really cool.
That's really awesome. I'll definitely have to check that out.
Just don't do it until you get home.
Yeah, fair enough.
You can do it on the big screen when the wife and kids aren't there. They won't think it's interesting at all. So
yeah, that's great. I could totally geek out on the couch.
I was in our cabin up in North Carolina and I'm looking at this on the iPad. And my wife's like, "What are you looking at?" And I showed her and she's like, "Seriously? How long have you been looking at that?"
What?
I'm like, "I have about 30 minutes."
Yeah. Who have I married? Yeah. Funny.
Anyway.
Hey, well, good chatting. Nice to talk again, AC.
Absolutely. Definitely nice talking to you. We have some fun interviews coming up in short order related to Microsoft Artificial Intelligence. So we get to start playing those over the next few weeks. But with that, everybody who we got some pretty good feedback from the episode 200 that came out. So hope everybody enjoyed that. A couple people want an Xbox, somebody want a Surface laptop. Anyway, that was fun. That was a lot of fun to go back and listen to that episode again.
Yeah, for sure. I listened to it in the car. It was good. Good times.
Oh, man. Yeah, your tirade on the F-bombs and everything for the drinking game got me I was laughing out loud in the speaker room over in Holland.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. Well done, Rade, for bleeping me out. Nice work.
Cool. Well, hey, CJ, good chatting with you again.
All right, likewise.
To everybody else, we will see you next week. Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a wave or an MP3, and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.